Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. It's no secret that the U.S. is the number one manufacturer and supplier of arms all around the world. Pentagon contracts bring in billions of dollars annually to continue brutal wars by allied nations. Nobody bats an eye at these facts. But when the proliferation of these arms seep into the black market, the U.S. calls that a problem. This week, we'll examine the Lords of War and black market arms. All right, let's get into the MO. What's the difference between the Pentagon and a black market arms trafficker? Some might say nothing, really, given the end result is the same, death and destruction. But they'll tell you that the former is done legally and on the books, that they're accounted for, and those arms are for noble wars or causes, maybe just protection or deterrence. In fact, a more accurate comparison might be the CIA versus arms dealers, like, say, convicted and now freed dealer Victor Boot. Because when you really think about it, given the CIA's long, sordid, ugly history of arming insurgents within the countries the U.S. deems an enemy, America's top spy agency is responsible for the proliferation of more off-the-books transfers of arms around the world than any one trafficker. Let's be clear about something. I am not promoting illegal arms trafficking in any way, shape, or form. But we can't pretend that black market arms dealers or mafias or crime syndicates are the source of these arms. That dubious title belongs to the U.S. military-industrial complex, who rake in hundreds of billions of dollars year after year, and a foreign policy of aggression that benefits from continuing to arm any and all conflicts around the world. Now, to discuss this complex web of arms trafficking, we'll bring in someone who has seen just how all this stuff works firsthand. Dr. Phil Giraldi is a retired CIA case officer and executive director of the Council for the National Interest. Phil, thank you for joining us. So first, according to a 2017 report by RAND Europe concerning how small arms proliferate into the EU, it says, the U.S. appears to be the most common source country for arms that are for sale on the dark web. They say 60% of firearms listings are associated with products that originated out of the U.S. Are we to assume that these sales are by individual sellers, or is there perhaps a criminal enterprise associated with some of these, such as like the mob or mafias, organized crime, things like that?
Well, I would say it's probably a combination of both. It's very easy to buy weapons in the United States, in most states. Here in Virginia, for example, if I wanted to go buy a military-style so-called assault rifle, I could walk into town right now and within 30 minutes have it. These weapons, of course, can be are military use. They can be taken and modified to fire full automatic by any gunsmith. And they're readily available. There are more weapons of this type in the United States alone than there are Americans. So you can see we're talking about 300 plus million of these weapons floating around. And there are certainly organizations that are both criminal and that serve other purposes, political purposes perhaps in some cases, that have easy access to these weapons. And if you're talking about getting them into Europe, there are a lot of ways to get things into Europe. Most of the Eastern European borders are somewhat porous, and also Europe is surrounded by a lot of water. If you can get 1.5 million immigrants smuggled into Europe, you can certainly get weapons into Europe too, and that's what we're seeing.
And for obvious reasons, it's difficult to get concrete numbers on just how much money is brought through black market arms sales or the dark web. The latter is estimated to generate around $100,000 a month in just firearm sales. But compared to the DOD sales numbers that are reported by the State Department, Those numbers are peanuts. According to the State Department, foreign military sales are approximately $55 billion annually, along with the direct commercial sales under the Bureau of Political Military Affairs, the Directorate of Defense Trade Controls. They approve approximately $115 billion a year in direct sales to foreign allies and partners. Now, we're talking heavy military hardware like Patriot missile batteries, Javelins, RPGs, and so forth. Now, if the net result is the same, death and destruction, what's the difference between conflicts around the world being armed by traffickers or the DOD?
Well, actually, there are a lot of subtle differences, shall we say. The DOD weapons, once interestingly enough, those numbers that you just provided, these are the known sales. These are sales that are approved by the U.S. government and or done by the U.S. government. And once these weapons are in the hands of a Ukrainian or an Egyptian or any combination of people, these weapons can go anywhere. And this is the real danger. I think that what we're missing here is that there are a lot of criminal sales or non-ethical sales. Now, ethical I would describe as sales that are weapons sold to a foreign country for their own defense, that sort of thing, or at least that's the justification. But the fact is there are many other possibilities in terms of weapons being sent to places like Pakistan, where they are distributed in Central Asia. Think of all the weapons that wound up in the hands of the Libyan government, that which we then overthrew, and these weapons wound up all over Africa and are still making trouble in Africa. And look in Syria. Syria, we have militia groups that are allied with the U.S. that are given access to these weapons. And I'm sure that this does not appear in any official report that you or I would be allowed to read. And these weapons basically wind up in various places, including in Turkey, which is a NATO ally. So there's an understatement in these numbers. I think the numbers that actually relate to weapons dispersals around the world to various groups, to various countries, to various individuals is much, much bigger than these numbers would suggest.
Now, what about the role of the CIA in arming various groups around the world? For example, in Latin America during the 1980s, certainly some of those arms proliferated beyond the groups that the U.S. Initially armed or intended, or more recently under Obama, the botched Fast and Furious scheme. Could any of these CIA-issued arms have contributed to armed conflicts we're seeing today?
Oh, I think there's no question of that. Obviously, you can go back as far as the U.S. attempt to get Russia out of Afghanistan, in which a number of terrorist groups, including al-Qaeda, were armed, trained, and further equipped. These weapons, some of them are still floating around. This produces a whole chain of disasters. I had, in my own personal experience, when I was in Istanbul, I was involved in Iran-Contra. I don't know if you remember that, but it was a scheme to sell weapons to the Iranians. Now, this was post-revolutionary Iran, and the money coming from this was like hidden money, which was going to be kicked back to support the Contras in Nicaragua. And this was illegal to sell the weapons to the Iranians, and it was illegal to be doing this with the Contras, but we were doing it anyway. Now, I was a CIA officer on the ground, arranging for the flights that were going back and forth with the weapons and the money and the Iranian leaders. And this was all done under orders from the National Security Council at that time. So a lot of the stuff that is credited to the CIA, sure, the CIA has the resources to do these things, but they do these things under orders of the National Security Council, which is indeed the right arm of the president.
All right. Phil Giraldi is staying with us. More with Phil in just a second. Coming up next, finders, keepers. What happens when the U.S. abandons a war effort and leaves behind billions of dollars in military hardware and weapons? We'll discuss it when we return. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
Четвертого числа сказали, война, собираемся, все едем.
У каждого была какая-то своя точка переломная, точка невозврата, можно сказать.
Здесь все совсем другое. Здесь все быстро и просто.
От России никто не отворачивался. Мы с ней и росли, мы с ней и жили.
Русским был, есть и буду.
Здесь не просто мужчины, здесь лучшие люди, они лучше нас.
Уход! Уход!
Все будет хорошо. Дорвемся.
Вариантов-то нет. Надо до конца добивать все эти мероприятия. Иначе будет только хуже.
Реально бояться можно. Прям можно бояться. Ну, трусить нельзя. Лучше мы будем здесь воевать, чем они придут туда, к нам домой.
The Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Seem wrong, when old rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
В центре города. Есть раненые.
Два удара было нанесено по Запорожской атомной станции.
Атомная станция превратилась в инструмент шантажа, в инструмент удовлетворения амбиций, решения каких-то военно-политических задач.
Это направляющая от того выстрела гранатомета РПГ-7, который упал ко мне на крышу. Часть минус 120-й. За последние сутки было нанесено порядка 50 ударов по территории города.
Да люди видят, вот подойдите вы в это общежитие, они видят, как с того берега летит.
1 сентября, когда господин Гросси еще вместе с представителями Росатома ходил непосредственно по территории Запорожской атомной станции, весь материал был предоставлен. То, что именно с Украины сюда прилетают снаряды, беспилотные летательные аппараты.
С атомными объектами всегда очень печально заканчивается.
Если произойдет определенная цепная реакция, то я думаю, что земному шару спешить уже некуда будет. Здесь это затронет не только Европу, затронет весь мир.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. Phil Giraldi, a retired CIA case officer, has graciously stuck around to talk more about the proliferation of U.S. arms around the world. So, Phil, let's examine that hasty departure by the U.S. military from Afghanistan. We had an entire base there, complete with Chinook helicopters, MRAPs, transport vehicles, and other very expensive, valuable military hardware. Those are all now in the hands of the Taliban, who the U.S. State Department labels a terror group. Now, in similar instances, when the U.S. leaves a conflict zone, or they say ends a war, are military equipment just sort of the spoils of war and its finders keepers? I mean, what happens with all of that stuff?
Well, precisely as in the case of Afghanistan, if there's no kind of withdrawal that's leisurely and safe, the equipment is just abandoned. In the case of Afghanistan, they knew this was coming, and they still didn't take steps to remove a lot of the equipment because they felt, hey, it was more expensive to remove it than to leave it. And that is a kind of stupid judgment. That's what this administration was into. They were confused about what was happening and where it would go. And so now the Taliban have the weapons. And there are weapons probably all over the place that are going to what we would regard as terrorist or subversive groups. And the source of the weapons could be Afghan, because a lot of the weapons were in the hands of the Afghan army, which was believed to be under control and monitored and so on and so forth. But that was a bit of a fiction. And so a lot of these soldiers, when the United States left, they just kind of dropped their weapons where they were and they went home. So I would assume a lot of these weapons have already gotten into the hands of people who we would prefer not to have these weapons. So it's kind of a problem with U.S. foreign policy in general that they can't seem to figure out what's coming up next week. This is a manifestation of it.
Indeed, warlords proliferate. Now, presently, the U.S. has been arming Ukraine to continue what many call a proxy war with Russia to a tune well north of $100 billion. Artillery shells, guns, mid-range missiles, air defense systems, and so on. This is all in the first year of conflict. Now, to contrast, the U.S. spent around $83 billion to train and arm the now failed Afghan forces between the year 2001 till the fall of Kabul in 2021. The head of Interpol, Jürgen Stock, said this to The Guardian regarding the massive amount of arms now going into Ukraine. He said, quote, "We can expect an influx of weapons in Europe and beyond. We should be alarmed. And we have to expect these weapons to be trafficked not only to neighboring countries, but to other continents." What do you make of his remarks?
Well, it's an interesting comment. And I would refer you to the recent developments in Ukraine, where we had the resignation of a senior spokesman of Zelensky's government. And we also had that unfortunate helicopter crash. There are sources that are saying right now that these people involved in this were all connected with stealing weapons coming in and proliferating them. So this was going on already, turning this into cash. And the suspicion is that one of them or some of them went too far. And there's a bit of tit for tat going on in terms of the people who are involved in this process. So I think that's an interesting theory, and there is some evidence for it. And also, you know, we're talking about a ton of money, either in credits and cash and that sort of thing, and also in the weapons, which are fully fungible. You can sell them anywhere. You can get a good price for them anywhere. And, this is the kind of thing that I believe the comment that you're quoting there is saying, look, these weapons are going to, a lot of them are going to just come loose. And once they're loose, the borders in Eastern Europe are permeable. And once you get them out of Europe, there are all kinds of people in Asia, Africa, and Latin America who are quite willing to meet you halfway to take them off your hands. The problem is that once you sell a weapon or give a weapon or give it to a government or you give it to a group or you give it to an organization, don't make any difference. They used to joke about how oil and stuff like that are fungible commodities. Well, weapons are fungible commodities too. They have serial numbers and it's pretty obvious where they're made, But that doesn't mean that you know where that weapon is at any point or who's using it. Once it's out of your hands, it's free to go.
Weapons are fungible commodities. Absolutely. Now, according to SIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, in 2020, they say the official global arms sales were valued at least at $112 billion in that year alone. Data from many places like this, including official U.S. numbers, it would appear the U.S. is responsible for arming much of the world. Some 40% of global arms sales comes from the DOD. A distant second place for Russia, coming in at about 27% of all the sales. Is it then fair to say that the U.S. is responsible for much of the bloodshed around the world, that the official sales also end up in black market trafficking?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about it. As I say, you can sell the a 1,000 machine guns to a very reputable buyer representing a government or something like that, but next week you don't know where those weapons are going to be. And the fact is the United States has by far the biggest military equipment industry, or military industrial complex as it's generally referred to, which produces all this stuff. So it's no surprise that most of the weapons that are floating around in the world are American made. And I would also add that the Stockholm suggestion of the amount of money that is involved in this, I would say you should double that if you're going to take into the account the black market. You might even want to triple it.
And last, Phil, is there anything else you think our international viewers should know about the proliferation of arms, perhaps in their own country?
Well, I think the issue becomes one of let's not let the people know what we're doing. And I think that's a general rule of what goes on. Every major Western European country has an arms industry. And the purpose of an arms industry is to sell weapons. And in those countries, if you're a citizen of Italy or France or Germany or Britain, you cannot buy a weapon. So all of this stuff is basically made to supply your own military in your own military. But on the other hand, the rest of this stuff has got to be sold to make this commercially viable. So you have an inbuilt hypocrisy, an inbuilt contradiction right here, which is the fact that, you know, citizens of Europe are not allowed to have weapons, but these weapons are being produced by their countries to be sold to other people elsewhere who can buy them and use them. So this is a bit ridiculous.
Dr. Phil Giraldi, retired CIA case officer and executive director at the Council for the National Interest. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. So as you can see, whether it's officials from a government selling the arms or individual traffickers, there's a very fine line that separates the two. But when your number one export is weapons of mass destruction, you become the reigning lords of war. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.